Welcome to another new episode of the Three Bid League podcast. As always, I am your host, Tyler, joined by my co-host, Matt. And today, we are joined by one of the newest members of the Atlantic 10, the point guard for the Loyola Chicago Ramblers, Braden Norris. Braden, thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So this is an A-10-centric podcast. We got to keep the first question A-10-centric. You're moving into a new conference. You're going to have a lot of new fun places to play. What's one spot that you're looking forward to going to this year?
I'm from Columbus, Ohio, so I got to say Dayton. I grew up going to a few Dayton games, so I'm familiar with that spot. It's a great place to play. You know, their fans are unbelievable. Obviously, you know, they're supposed to be, you know, really good this year. So I'm looking forward to that one. You know, I have a lot of family and friends there. And to be able to play in that arena and that environment, you know, that's what you work for.
Yeah, right down the road in Hilliard, Ohio. Plenty of the Dayton fans familiar with that area. I thought that you might say Richmond. You gave a nice little story on the Believe podcast with your former teammate Cameron Crutwig about how the Spiders were very interested in you as a transfer. And yeah. I found it interesting. You'd one of your best career scoring games the last time you played them, 21 points. When you got him up in Chicago. So chance to get revenge for a close loss there.
Yeah, for sure. I was really close with that coaching staff, really good people over there. Appreciate all that they did for me. I'll be looking forward to that one as well. You know, got to get back a little bit. You know, they got us the first time we played them a couple years ago.
Yeah. And two really interesting games because you guys are going to have a quality team this year. It's deep on talent. It's very deep on depth with plenty of good transfers and good young freshmen coming in. But what it doesn't really have is cohesiveness right now. You and Marquise Kennedy, the only two returning starters. You have a few bench contributors returning as well. But there's a lot of new faces on this team. So as the senior point guard, what was this summer like for you getting to know all your new teammates and what was your role in trying to bring all these guys together?
It was a role that I haven't really experienced since being in college, especially at Loyola. We've always had veterans here, whether it's Lucas, Sahir Ugwak, Cameron Crutwig, the list goes on. So me and Keese really came together and took on the challenge of leading these new guys and, you know, getting them up to speed to where they need to be by the time, you know, November hits and we start playing games. It's been a challenge, but it's also been a fun challenge, at least for me in a new kind of leadership role. I've really taken pride in that this summer. But these new guys are coming along. I'm really excited about where we're at right now. And, you know, we're just going to keep getting better. We had the France trip. We went overseas. I think that was huge for us, you know, with this new group. Half the team's new. So it was big on and off the floor just to get that experience with each other. We played three really good teams, two teams being pro A teams in France. So very good competition, but it's been fun. And, you know, I'm looking forward to growing this relationship with the new guys and, you know, putting this team together.
And while you were going through those games, cause it actually, the timing worked out pretty well for you guys to get some experience with this new roster. Was there any player in specific in terms of new guys who you felt like you just really clicked with immediately, like, oh, wow, this guy's going to be just a great fit on the court with you?
Yeah, I think all the new guys, especially in France, had their moments. Even the freshmen that came, you know, Trey Lewis and Jalen Quinn, our first game, they had really good second halves for us and played very well. Jalen had, you know, 17 and like 7 his first game. And then, you know, the vets that the transfers, the grad transfers, whether it's Jamero or Bryce, you know, they know how to play. They've been doing this for a long time. And then Phil and Sheldon are very talented transfers that are going to help us a lot this season. And they both had their moments in France too. They bring a lot to our team, whether it's, you know, scoring. You know, Phil Austin is a freak athlete that can do things that not many people can do on both ends of the court. So, you know, everyone has had their moments. And I think that people are going to see, you know, a team that that's fun to watch, especially these new guys.
And was there anything that really stood out to you on that French trip, whether it was just something with your teammates, maybe some sort of camaraderie moment, or just being in France and the beauty of another country?
Yeah, I think, you know, I was just talking about this to someone else, you know, the little things on that trip, whether, you know, it's bus rides in between cities, you know, sitting at dinner with those guys and getting to, you know more about them and their past and where they came from. Also, what just makes them go, you know, what's their why? I think that's really important, you know, when you're creating a team, especially when half the team is new. So all that stuff was super important. You know, I think all of us enjoyed that part and we all felt like we grew closer on that trip.
Well, it's great to hear. And it'll be interesting to see how everyone comes together, how this rotation ends up turning out for the team. But one of the things that we're most interested in seeing is the role that you're going to take on this season. You averaged slightly over 10 points a game last year. You were the lowest scoring guy on the Missouri Valley All-Conference teams last year. And for any of our fans who haven't watched you, that just goes to show what you contribute with the ball in your hands as a passer and as a creator for these guys. But this season, with a lot of veterans gone, with your leading scorer, Lucas Williamson, now in the NBA, do you think you're going to take on more of a scoring role, or do you still see yourself as just this all-time glue guy distributor for everyone else?
You know, I think the statistics part, you know, all that comes naturally year by year. You know, I don't go into games saying, you know, I need to score this, I need to shoot this many times. That's never been my game. And to be honest, that's not what we do here at Loyola. We go into the game thinking about one thing, and that's winning. And I think that's what makes us so successful here. You know, Cameron Krutwig was a third-team All-American, averaging, I think it was like 14, 15 points. Lucas Williamson signed an NBA contract averaging 13 last year. So, you know, it's really not about that here. All we're focused on winning, and that's going to be my main goal too. You know, I don't care how many points I score, how many assists I have, how many rebounds. It's all about one thing, and that's winning championships here, and that's what makes us so successful. And, you know, it's going to continue to be that way for me.
You guys are new to the Atlantic 10, and big college basketball fans have gotten to see a lot of Loyola the last couple years with all the success the Ramblers have had. But to A-10 fans in general, you're going to be a newer face. So overall, how would you describe the identity of your team, your program, what you guys do best on the court?
Yeah, I mean, I'll just go off of what I said. You know, that the winning culture we have here is different than a lot of places. We truly, you know, we think that if you win, then, you know, your individual, all the stuff that comes with, you know, individual that are signing pro contracts after your career, or individual awards that come at the end of the year, whether that's all conference, all defense, if you win, all that will take care of itself. But, you know, we take pride in defense. You know, we're usually top 25 defensively each year. 2 years ago, we were number one defensively. So we take pride in defensively. That's where it starts for us. And we think that's how you win championships, on the defensive end. But we're always going to play solid, smart basketball. You know, we're never going to beat ourselves, or at least we shouldn't beat ourselves. You know, that's always the goal going into the game. So, you know, you're going to have to come in, and you're going to have to find a way to beat us.
And do you see this team being able to hold up on the defensive end the same way that the last few years teams have? Like, you're losing Lucas Williamson, who was just an absolutely incredible defender. Are these new guys going to be up to the task for replacing him?
Oh, well, they better be, or else they probably won't play. No, but in all seriousness, yeah, they are. You know, obviously Lucas, Ahir, even guys like Tate Hall, who were just fantastic on the defensive end, you know, got stuff done. But, you know, these guys, I've been telling people this is the most talented team I've ever been on at Loyola. And I truly mean that, you know, not taking away what Lucas, Ahir, and Tate, all those guys do, because, you know, they're really good at what they do. But the guys that we have this year. You know, I don't think a lot of Loyola fans have even seen, you know, what we're going to put on the floor this year in terms of talent. With that being said, you know, we're going to have to lock into those small details and, you know, the scouting reports that we have, you know, each game. But, you know, I think we're going to be able to do that. And you'll see us right at the top of all the defensive rankings by the end of the year.
And that's really interesting to hear, because you've been on two really good teams these last 2 years. And for anyone who isn't really familiar that's listening, it doesn't matter that you guys got in by winning the Missouri Valley. I watched those two teams, and if you guys were in the A-10, they absolutely would have been NCAA tournament teams in this conference too. So if this team's even more talented than everyone else, better look out. But I want to take a moment to talk a little bit about your game. And I'm curious to know, do you know what your career high in assists is?
I think 12.
You are correct. It was actually your final game at Oakland. It kind of blew my mind. At Loyola, you have not gotten to double digits. You have a ton of games where you've gotten to 9.
Yeah, I haven't got to double digits. I've had 8 and 9 several times, I think.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of them, plenty of 7s as well. But I wanted to know if that was still lingering around in your brain. But I do want to ask you about one specific game last season. That was double overtime at home against Valparaiso. You hit 4 threes in the overtimes, including the game tire to send it to double overtime, and then 3 more in double OT. As a guy who, as we talked about, you're not a big time scorer, you're a very unselfish player. But in that moment, did you feel like you did kind of have to kick it up a notch? Was that something that you were actually acknowledging, like, hey, I'm hot, this is my game to score here? Or you were just really in the moment, and by the end it was, wow, 23 points.
Yeah, I think, you know, it was just one of those moments where, you know, I caught fire a little bit. And then also we were running sets to, you know, get me in good positions, get me open shots, and my teammates were finding me. And, you know, I just caught fire. That last shot to put it in overtime, we were kind of having a bad possession. And I just remember I got an open look for a second. I just let it rip. But, you know, I do live for those big moments. I take pride in that. You know, I work hard for a reason. And so, you know, when those opportunities present itself, I love that moment. And, you know, I live for that moment.
Yeah. And that came through on your home court. The fans were rocking that night. And for those unfamiliar, Gentile? Gentile Arena, which I've had the pleasure of being in once here. It's a small arena, but it's very well designed. It can get loud in there when the people pack it in. So what's your favorite memory from something that happened on your home floor in these 2 years with the Ramblers?
Well, it's hard to say because my first year was COVID, so there wasn't fans at the games. No, but I got to say probably Northern Iowa this year. You know, I think we were both in first by the time we played the first time around, and that place was rocking. You know, I think our students are some of the best in the country. You know, they show out no matter who we're playing, and they come ready to go, and they're loud. They get there early. But I would say Northern Iowa at home this year, you know, that place was sold out, and it was loud in there.
Yeah. And that was a pretty good Northern Iowa team. We saw them absolutely destroy St. Bonaventure as well. They ended up getting the 1 seed in the Missouri Valley tournament. And then you guys took them out on your way to a second straight tournament berth. But we've kind of asked you about the Loyola mentality. But for anyone who hasn't seen you guys play over the last 2 years, that's now going to see you in the A-10, besides the defense and the hardworking, what's one thing that they should expect to see from the Ramblers or expect to see from watching Braden Norris?
I expect them to see, you know, I think this year with all the talent we have, you know, I think we'll look faster. We'll play a little bit faster. You know, we're doing some new things offensively. You know, I'm not going to share that on here. I'm not going to give the scout report away, but, you know, I think they're going to see some new styles offensively. You know, Drew's been on us about pace, especially in the half court. this summer. So I think our pace in the half court and offensively will be a lot better, you know, and we have our guys are athletic, you know, we're going to get out and run, you know, hopefully put on a show on the offensive end, you know, in the defensive end, we're going to do what we do and be solid and get stops. And then, you know, hopefully, like I said, we get out and run and have fun on offense, but, you know, and then as it goes for me, you're going to see the same me. I'm not changing. You know, the recipe has worked to this point. So as long as we keep winning, I'm not going to change at all. I'm going to be the same me. I always am. Cause you know, I think that's good enough. So, yeah.
Yeah. And while we got you here, I got to have you grade my player comparison for you. I've seen you as not the Duquesne version that a lot of our fans have seen, but the Arizona version of TJ McConnell, a guy who can score when he really needs to. We know he's capable of it, good shooter, but most of all, with the talent around you, you're out there to just set other people up and just rack up assists. Is that a fair comparison?
I'll give that a very high grade. That guy's been in the NBA for a pretty long time now, so I'll take that one.
Yeah, two very smart, very crafty players as well for both of you guys, but we'll close it out with this. Everyone knows Loyola for one reason more than any other, and that is your team chaplain, Sister Jean, who recently celebrated her 102nd birthday. So congratulations to her. Are you two very good friends, kind of friends? What's your role as the captain of Loyola in getting to know Sister Jean?
Yeah, I would say me and Sister are good friends. You know, I think everyone that plays in the program, you know, she's around all the time. She goes to our practices. She's there before every game. She speaks to us before every game, you know, says a prayer. And then she sends us emails individually after every game as well. You know, so she's around. She's there. I would say all of us, you know, have a relationship with Sister. And she's huge for our school, obviously. You know, when people think of Loyola Chicago, the first thing they think of is Sister Jean. So she is the brand. And, you know, but yeah, all of us have good relationships with her. And just because I'm the captain, it doesn't really change much.
Yeah, the one time I've seen Sister Jean in person was up at Loyola a few years ago, and she before the game was just smiling and talking to all these people. So, like, we always see her kind of quiet on TV, but she does come across as a very nice woman. So it's good to know that she is the guardian of the Loyola program. But Braden Norris, thank you for taking the time to join us, and welcome to the A-10.
Thank you, I appreciate it.
All right, another thank you to Braden Norris for joining us on the show. We are going to open the mailbag back up. We got about a half dozen questions still left. We're going to get through most of those today. But before we do, just a quick shout out to the guys over at the Gola Standard, along with the VCU B-Ball Burner account, who both sent us good mailbag questions that we will not be covering today. Those will be coming in our final mailbag segment. But Matt, what else do we have?
I want to know who the burner account is. That could be Mike Rhodes.
It's at Will Wade. RIP Will Wade. So I don't think it's Will Wade.
Well, that's what he wants you to think. All right. Well, we'll keep it going with some Ramblers talk, because Matthew Rowley asked us for some honest opinions about Loyola's offseason. And do we think they can finish top five this year?
Can I say it's 50-50 on the dot? The more I'm working through this, I'm starting to see kind of a tier 2A beginning to form with Loyola, Davidson, and George Mason, just in terms of their talent level and the stars that they're bringing back. And I think that those three teams all end up somewhere in the 4-7 range. And then someone in the tier below them will be up with them. Maybe it's UMass, maybe it's Richmond, maybe it's Bonaventure, Rhode Island, but someone in that tier is just going to be better than I expect them to be. And so I kind of see all four of those teams as pretty even at this point. I think right now, just roughly running through how I'm feeling about my power rankings, I think I'd put the Ramblers sixth, but they're very, very close to that fifth spot and pretty close to that fourth for double bye.
It's a little bit of a cop-out, but I agree that it's about 50-50. And the further we've gotten into the off-season, I've really started to think it is a three-horse race with VCU, Dayton, and St. Louis in whatever order you prefer. I wanted to say at the beginning of the off-season it was more wide open, but the more I look at it, just every team in the middle of the pack has some sort of flaw where Loyola lost almost everybody aside from two starters from their tournament team. George Mason is a ton of talent, but they just weren't very good last year, same as UMass. Rhode Island's rebuilding. Davidson lost the player of the year. The list goes on. Every team in this group has things that could go really well if it all comes together, but it's hard to gauge right now. So I do think Loyola is going to be more than capable of finishing top five. I'm also just wondering how good that is going to be. Like, if you're 80th in the net or KenPom, is that good enough for a top five finish, or is it going to be a stronger year for the A-Town? See, I almost think it will be. I think we're going to have three top 50 teams, and after that, I'm feeling like maybe one or two more in the top 100, but I have my doubts, which I don't like at this stage of the offseason.
Well, I think your question's kind of the right one to ask, figuring out where Loyola's going to go, because if we take out those top three, I think the Ramblers have the highest floor. Because of the system, yeah. Because they have a good coach, and because of Norris and Kennedy coming back. They have a really good backcourt no matter what. Now, whether or not they can hit their ceiling, it's going to be dependent on a bunch of the freshmen and Philip Alston, who's coming in from Division II, who I've just keep hearing great things about, but he also is coming from Division II. It's a big jump from California University of Pennsylvania to playing against Duquesne. And so we'll see if he can keep it up. He was a big time scorer at that level. The biggest thing, and Braden mentioned just the selflessness that that team's going to have, but they're going to need a heat check guy or two. They had that last year with Ryan Schwiegert, who I think only came in around 9 points a game, but he had a few just absolute explosions that they had to have. And it's not fully clear right now who the role guy is that can take that spot this year. Someone's going to have to be a big time scorer in a few really important games for them to get up there.
Yeah, I do think in this case, Loyola and Davidson are going to be kind of similar because it's two teams that made it to the tournament last year, lost a lot. But in the case of Loyola, experience isn't going to be a problem, even though they aren't returning much from last year's team. They do have three transfers that have played a lot of games at a high level at the Division I level. And you mentioned Philip Alston. I think Javonte Perkins kind of clouded our view of what to expect from Division II or junior college players, but he could be really good as well. So they should have a lot of options. They're going to have enough experience where things could go very well and they could make it back to the tournament. So overall, I do think it was a strong offseason getting ready for A-10 play. So moving it along, we'll go over to Davidson Baseball Stan account, who asked us over under 20 points per game for Foster Lawyer, the one returning all conference player for the Wildcats. And I'll start out by saying at first I thought this was just a silly question. The more I dive into it, it's actually a pretty good line, I think. But I'm curious to hear your thoughts.
No, it's not happening. Like, the only way this is getting there is if Foster Lawyer just feels like he's on a garbage team and needs to shoot all the time to save him. And the more I look at it, the more I realize this Davidson roster is still pretty talented. Like, if you threw Foster Lawyer with, like, the LaSalle or the GW roster, he probably gets there. But he's not going to be able to shoot enough. He's got plenty of guys to pass the ball to.
See, my initial impression was just that Davidson plays way too slow to have a 20-point scorer. I didn't realize that both Peyton Aldridge and Jack Gibbs each had a pair of 20-point seasons. And in fact, in 2017, both of those guys averaged above 20. So I think there's a chance losing both Brakovich and Lee. Davidson's still going to have some guys that can shoot the ball. I'm expecting Meninga, especially, to have a big jump in scoring, but I think he'll get close. He averaged 16.1 last season. If I had to guess, he falls just short of that, but I bet he gets to 18 or 19. That wouldn't surprise me at all.
If he gets over 20, I think that means that Davidson stinks.
It could, but it could also mean that, I mean, the Peyton Aldridge year where he averaged 21, they made the tournament, and that was with Kelvin Grady and John Axel Goodmanson.
Yeah,
so
but
it's not like
Peyton Aldridge wasn't the team's main distributor. So I just don't think Foster Lawyer, I think for Foster Lawyer to get to 20 as a guy at his stature means he's got to start forcing shots, which we basically never, ever saw from him last year.
That's true. I think also Peyton Aldridge was just one of the best players we've seen in the A-10 in the last decade. And I think he gets underappreciated. So that's true. Probably under, but it'll be close, I think.
It's different for a minuscule point guard versus a 6'10 guy who can both post up and space the floor.
Yeah. All right. We'll go over to Bonna Nation's question, which this is kind of just a group of questions about UMass, but we'll just tackle them all real quick. Is UMass the new hot destination for players in the A-10? Do they have NIL money, or is their coach Frank Martin just good at recruiting? And should we be looking out for UMass in the future?
I'll basically go blanket yeses across the board here. Are they the hot destination? They definitely were this year. They're going to continue to bring in transfers as long as Martin is successful. Although obviously it won't be the same level because next year they should bring back most of this roster. And I think next year's hot destination may end up being Rhode Island because it feels like they got about half the pieces they need and they're going to have to go grab the rest next year. NIL money. I mean, we can't speak to any specific reporting, but I would assume that there's a little decent influx of cash flowing around there. We've seen how many fans have gone and bought their season tickets this year. So people are going to be willing to pay to promote the UMass basketball program this year.
And they're not spending that NIL money on football. So imagine that's being allocated
to basketball.
Well, it could
be going to hockey. So
yeah. And women's basketball. Really good at UMass too. But yeah, I would say right now, I wouldn't call UMass the new hot destination in the A-10. As far as I'm concerned, it's still Dayton, VCU, and St. Louis. I mean, year in and year out, those are the three schools that consistently bring in the most talent. And you'll have teams pop up like, you know, Richmond's been on a good run and St. Bonaventure's been on a good run. But at the end of the day, it's still kind of the same three schools that every single year they're bringing in a strong recruiting class. And until we see UMass actually have a few successful seasons with Martin, I'm not, or even one successful season, like we'll see what they do this year, but certainly in a better spot than they were 12 months ago.
Well, that's what makes them hot. They did a great job this year. I think unless they completely suck, they can do a great job next year.
Yeah.
But then after that, it might just burn out immediately.
I mean, they were kind of a hot destination for the last 3 years. They got Trey Mitchell. They got all the Woodstock guys. Like, they were, talent wasn't really the big issue there. They were getting some pretty good recruits. So I don't even know how much that changed this year. Now it might just come down to the different philosophies in coaching.
Yeah, actually playing some defense.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting, seeing UMass actually defend someone. All right, we'll go into our last question for the night from West Pine Bills, who asked us to come up with some A-10 Player of the Year tiers. And Tyler, I think you went a little bit deeper into this question than I did.
I went even deeper than what I'm going to talk about here. But I'm going to present here real quickly five tiers. Your favorites, tier 1A, Daron Holmes, Ace Baldwin, 1B, Yuri Collins, Javonte Perkins. Simple math. 90% of the time, the player of the year is going to be the best player on one of the two best teams. And right now, it's pretty clear that these are the four candidates. I think Collins and Perkins are a little bit below because we can't be certain which one of them is actually going to be St. Louis's best player. Tier 2, could Josh Oduro have won last year if Mason was better group, which is guys that we know are going to put up monster numbers, clearly be the best player on their team, maybe that team can get into the top four. There's a little bit of cannibalization at the top and they could grab the award. And that's Josh Aduro, Noah Fernandes, Tyler Burton. Tier three is guys that we know are going to be the best player on their teams, on teams that could be really good, but probably won't put up the gaudy numbers necessary. Foster Lawyer and Braden Norris. Then we have a huge drop off before our tier four dark horses, where I'm basically just looking for someone who could break out on a good team, maybe surprisingly be their best player. Malachi Smith, Tamani Kamara, Jaden Nunn, Gibson Jimerson. And because he's going to be the best player on what could be a pretty good Rhode Island team, Breon Freeman. Oh, and I'd put Semenega in there too. And then tier five, just your wild, crazy shot in the dark. Wow, we just did not see this guy's incredible season coming. Ticket Gaines, Victor Bailey, Day-Day Grant, Darius Quisenberry, basically any of the three Bonaventure transfers in the backcourt. There's a whole lot of guys you could throw in that group. Rashul Diggins going to UMass, Matt Cross, if one of them really breaks out. Those are my tiers.
I pretty much agree with you. I think right now, like, I agree with the top four you mentioned. I think I'd put Daron Holmes and Ace Baldwin a little bit ahead of the St. Louis guys, just because I think having two really good players on the same team hurts them both a little bit. I feel like we've seen that in the past, like with Jordan Goodwin and Javonte Perkins a couple years ago. They both kind of knocked each other down, it felt like, when it came to awards. But pretty much agree with what you said. And I'm curious, since we had this happen last year with Luka Brankovic, if you had to pick one player who's never made an all-conference team in the A-10, who do you think is the best shot at winning this award? Because I have a couple.
Well, we kind of talked about it on our player ranking pod. And just given the makeup of Dayton, VCU, and SLU right now, it basically has to be like Davidson last year, where it's this team that's in the middle of the preseason rankings that just basically bursts out of nowhere and wins the conference. I think the answer is somehow actually Sam Menenga. The other one is Malachi Smith. If both Dayton big guys just basically kind of put up the same stats and Malachi actually starts scoring and they just run away with the whole thing and he's the glue to everything. But I guess it's Menenga. I want to say Ticket Gaines, but I don't think he'll score enough.
No, I think the problem is that Ticket Gaines, just, we know he's not going to be the lead guy for Mason. Menenga is the first that came to mind for me too, just because we could still see Foster Lawyer remain in that main distributor role, and maybe Menenga just explodes and goes up to 18 points a game, like what we saw from Luka last season. And then I think the other option too, you know, one possibility is a surprise team wins the league, but I could also see a world where Ace Baldwin just continues his, like, you know, similar trajectory of dishing out assists, and maybe Jaden Nunn just goes bananas for VCU and takes on that big scoring responsibility. Maybe he makes the Bones Highland jump, where Bones only averaged about 8 or 9 points a game his freshman year and then really took off in year two. So I think those are the two for me. Malachi Smith possibly, but I just don't see a world where he's the best player on Dayton. I don't. Same with Kamara. I think Daron Holmes is just going to have too good of a season.
Yeah, and basically every other scenario is solid team, like, sneaks into fourth. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a weird vote. That's your Breon Freeman case. That's your, like, super way off Day-Day Grant case. I don't think
James Noah Bishop.
I don't think Noah, well, GW's not sneaking into fourth.
It's snuck into seventh last year.
I don't think Noah Fernandes made an all-conference team, so that actually could be a reasonable
answer.
He
maybe hasn't, yeah. That's like a loophole, though.
The other, if we're just going completely wild-ass dark horse here, to close this thing out for our Loyola fans, Shelton Edwards shot 36% from three, put up 12 points a game on an abominably bad Valparaiso team last year. He's actually going to be on a good roster this season with good players around him to help him get better. So maybe 12 points a game for an awful team turns into 16 or 17 on a good team. And that big scoring number is enough because Loyola could very well finish top three.
Yeah, they definitely could. And, you know, having our conversation today, it gets me excited about Loyola basketball, learning a little bit more about their culture, what to expect from their team. And to be honest, I wasn't quite as high on the Ramblers. Maybe it's just our recency bias talking to Braden Norris, but that is a really strong program. It's exciting to have them joining the A-10. And even though it might not look that way on paper, just you don't have a lot of guys who scored a bunch of points and put up big numbers, this is a really well-coached team. It's a culture of winning. They went to a Final Four a couple of years ago. Like, this is going to be a talented group, and I'm excited to see how they compete in the A-10.
Yeah, and last year, even though they lost their best player from that team, they did not have any big scores like Braden mentioned. Something I did want to give everybody detail on. Six guys all over 7.5 points a game last year, but no one over 14. And I think we'll see something very similar from them this year.
Yeah, should be exciting.
All right. That does it for this episode of the Three Bid League podcast. Come back every week, the remainder of this preseason. We will have a new episode for you as we begin to work our way into November. If you enjoyed this episode, please give us 5 stars on iTunes. Leave us a comment on there. Send us your feedback on Twitter at the 3BidLeaguePod. Or if you're old school and you prefer it, you can shoot us an email, number3bidleague@gmail.com. We'd love to hear what we're doing well. Maybe something that we could be doing a little bit better. Or even some episode ideas, possible guests that you feel like would be good on the show. And especially keep sending us your mailbag questions. Everyone, enjoy this beautiful fall weather out there.